Hey, everybody, let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. Tonight, our speaker needs no introduction. Is he in the room? I'm looking around. I thought he may have slipped out the door. Rusty Jones. U.S. Marine Corps.
Thank you, Tim. I'm Rusty Jones. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. You know, I was thinking about how to address Veterans Day and Memorial Day and being a veteran and this being Memorial Day. Memorial Day is for the fallen veteran. My older brother was killed in Vietnam, and my orders may have been cut around Vietnam because of that. My father or my uncle were in a position to influence, and I don't know whether that happened or not, but I was told it did. But anyway, I don't know. We of Alcoholics Anonymous, of Al-Anon, we're all veterans of a war within. In the big book, Bill starts out on page 1, talking about war fever. And he spends basically one page talking about a war that happened overseas. The next 16 pages are talking about a war within that I relate to. By Marine Corps standards, I am a virgin. I have no combat experience. I've never seen a shot fired in anger. So, anyway, I was raised right here in Atlanta. Went to Northside High School. I was very much an addict in high school. Competition was my drug of choice. I did not need alcohol or drugs. I learned championship attitude very early, very young, and very thoroughly. You're number one and you're nothing. And I did not realize until I came into these rooms and had some time in these rooms how that mentality fed this disease. You're number one and you're nothing. Well, I graduated from high school. I was a sophomore state champion in the pole vault. I was number one. I lost the state championship my junior and senior year. I was told by a collegiate track coach that I was too short, I'm 5'6", to pole vault in the Southeastern Conference. So I went to Mississippi State to prove he was wrong. I never accomplished that feat. He was totally correct. I was outclassed by taller, faster. I was very good at what I did. My mechanics were excellent and all of that, but you know, I was only 5'6". And I had some great coaching in high school, and I had that going for me. My first real lesson in humility was at the athletic dorm at Mississippi State. I was no longer the big deal. I was one of a number of state champions, state record holders. That's a little more than the minimum requirement to compete at the collegiate level. If you finish less than third in the state in high school, you're hardly a candidate at the collegiate level. So I somehow managed to letter. I was not into heavy drinking at the time. My first drunk was at a fraternity party where I bought a bottle of Usher's Green Stripe Scotch. And my first drunk, my first blackout, my first real fraternity party. My first time I bought a bottle of liquor and controlled it all by myself without any kind of supervision. I remember waking up cold, leaning up against my roommate's car, sitting in the gravel with about 8 months left in the bottle. Total blackout. I knew something was wrong with that scotch. Or scotch. So I stayed away from scotch. My daddy taught me well. My father was a Marine officer. Served 36 years. Retired CWO3. Chief Warrant Officer. Taught me scotch to celebrate, brandy for medicinal purposes. You know. And I looked back and there was always a reason to drink. You know, there was either when I was drinking, you know, something to celebrate, something to take the edge off, something to make it all go away. An early sponsor told me, he said, Rusty, I don't care how much you drink, I don't care how long you drink, and I don't care what you drink. What we need to talk about is why you drink. Because that's what separates the alcoholic from the rest of the drinking world. Isn't how much we drink, how long we drink, or what we drink. I drank because I had to. I drank because I needed to. I drank because I needed a little something to take the edge off. I drank because I was not okay with who and what I was. Until I picked up that first drink. Whatever was wrong with me, as far as my self-image, my self-concept, the way I felt about me was defective. Alcohol fixed all that. See, alcohol made Rusty okay. Alcohol made me 10 feet tall and bulletproof. First thing you learn in the military, and the Marine Corps does the best job of teaching it, you're either bulletproof or you're expendable. What are you? You're bulletproof or you're expendable. That's what it has to be. Some combination thereof. But, yeah. And I don't know psychologically what we do when you're expendable. I know I'm not bulletproof, but I unlearned bulletproof, and if I wasn't bulletproof, I had to be expendable. So, anyway, moving right along. That's not a subject I'm an expert on. It's just, yeah. My drinking progressed in high school, in college. One of my worst drunks ever was at a change of command party in the Marine Corps, where at the end of the party, I don't know how many of you have been to change of command parties, the XO picks up all the leftover liquor and pours it in a punch bowl. And everybody gets who hadn't finished drinking, starts drinking that. I blacked out. It was not a good, one of the worst hangovers I've ever had, or something, and I don't know what all was in that, but it was quite an elixir. Anyway, I'm not up here to tell you how I drank, or what I drank, I'm up here to tell enough about my drinking history to give the newcomer something to relate to. And qualify myself to tell you how this alcoholic found a relationship with God. As Tim read, that's the purpose of this deal. If I don't do that, there's no point in me being up here. How did I find a relationship with God? I experienced a process. That was when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, let me back up just a little bit. At the end of my collegiate career, which I was a loser. I luttered, but I was if you're number one and you're nothing and you're not number one, you're a loser. So alcoholics understand that thinking pretty well. So, and that was, I left college as a loser. I did not go there. I did not achieve what I went there for. I did end up with a degree, but not a conference championship. So, Anyway, I married probably the only young lady at Mississippi State who didn't think I was totally insane for joining the Marine Corps because of something that was never declared a war going on in Vietnam. Well, I was from a Marine Corps family. My father's a Marine. My brother's a Marine. Just did the natural thing and joined the Marine Corps. Anyway, then, married the lovely mother of my children as soon as she graduated one semester behind me, and then we went off and did the Marine Corps thing. And I assured her, because I had to, that she did not have to play political games with the senior officers' wives to enhance my career. I could rise to the top on my own merit without playing politics, or her playing politics. The Marine Corps is above all that. That's the damnedest lie I ever told the lovely mother of my children. It got political, and I didn't do it well. I didn't do politics real well. I don't really get into much of what I did in the Marine Corps or the impact in detail that it had on the marriage. The military is not conducive to healthy marriage. I remember standing in my home in the uniform of a United States Marine captain, and the only home I've ever owned, 10, 12 feet from the lovely mother of my children, who said, "Rusty, you've changed." And I had no response. I had no defense. I changed. She knew it. I knew it. It was off. And all in the line of duty, of course, but I changed. And she married a sweet, innocent civilian, divorced a Marine captain. I changed. And I could spend hours on that, but so I will just move along. That's a whole other story. And the better part of my story isn't meat material. But that's why we have sponsors and sponsorees, and I have to keep it meat material. And I think on top of that, we're on tape, so I have to be a little more careful. Sometimes I get, well. After the Marine Corps, I took a job as a computer operator. I had two sons while I was in the Marine Corps. Both my sons were born when I was in California. They're both California natives. There are such things as California natives. Everybody doesn't go there. Some people are born there, too. Both my sons were born there. Orange County Children's Hospital, very nice place. I want to say this. Nothing that the way I was raised, joining the Marine Corps, being married to who I married, and nothing that anybody could have done or should have done or would have done or could have done would have changed the fact that I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. Not because I drank the way I drank. I'm not an alcoholic because of the way I drank. I drank that way because I'm an alcoholic. Alcohol did not make me what I am. What I am made me an drink alcoholic. And that's just the reality of the alcoholic of my time. I didn't drink my way into alcoholism. My first drunk was total blackout. So, yeah. Anyway, I went into stress overload. I was in a very high stress billet, is what the military calls the job description. I was in a high stress, somewhere no alcoholic probably should be in the first place. I was in a communications and handling on classified information, living with and having children by a sweet, innocent civilian who was. And you can only be married so long before when something's not right. You don't even have to talk about it. You don't need to talk about it. It's obvious to the partner that something's not right. And I came home too many nights, something not right. We couldn't talk about it. I married my mother's opposite. My mother was an alcoholic. The lovely mother of my children is particularly straight-laced, Southern Baptist. Never drank, never smoked. Wonderful mother for my children. I did right by the boys when I chose their mother. And that's, you know, I came in here hating her. I came in here hating the church. And I came here done with the Bible and I'm done with God and the whole nine yards because I was raised Episcopal. She was raised Southern Baptist. It didn't work. It was, you know, the church was had its own problems. And February 79, Judy left. Went home, took the boys, and went back to her mother because I wasn't in good shape mentally. I was having career problems as a police officer, and a little town in Texas. So I was having career problems, and Judy took off. She couldn't handle my... I was becoming a rageaholic. She was okay with my drinking. It was a rage that she had a problem with. She left. My father passed away that same week, and I went over some of it. I had a very religious experience that same week, February 79, same month. And I came out of that overall situation, February 79, certified paranoid schizophrenic prognosis poor. And that diagnosis followed me for 25 years. I've been certified paranoid schizophrenic, schizotypal, schizoaffective, schizophrenic explosive personality is what the VA in Augusta chose to call it. Alcoholics Anonymous chose to call me a loose cannon. That was the AA diagnostic label, was loose cannon. The VA called it schizophrenic explosive personality. There was no such thing as non-combat PTSD at the time, so, and I still don't fall into that category. I had a psychologist. I spent most of my second year in recovery in a VA hospital in Augusta, where a clinical psychologist told me I was the obvious. I was a second-generation Marine officer. I was emotionally but not legally service-connected. There is a difference. There's a big difference, and it's true of a lot of people. We've got a lot of vets in these rooms and everywhere else who are emotionally but not legally service-connected. Moving right along. February 82, I found these rooms. After staying drunk from February 79 to February 82, got one DUI. So I came into you people certified paranoid schizophrenic prognosis poor. I was barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. And that's what I came here with you people to work with. I trusted nobody, nothing. I was a rageaholic. I was heavily medicated to sedate the rage, because that's all. That's what they did back then. I couldn't stay on the meds, the psych meds that they treated schizophrenia with 35, 32 years ago were pretty primitive by today's standards and very hard for anybody to stay on. And I couldn't stay on them. And I could no longer drink my way off them. That's what I did. I was drinking my way off everything the doctors put me on for 3 years. You take drinking and drugging off the table, no longer an option, and nothing's working, the obvious solution is suicide. But I called a sponsor one night, and I told him I had a female sponsor. I was too competitive with men. I had some men trying to work with me, and we weren't clicking. I remember at my sponsor search for men, I talked to a young man, I've forgotten who I talked to, told me I need to talk to Hal Collier. I didn't like Hal Collier, so I went and got a second opinion from another old-timer who told me, Rusty, you need to go talk to Hal Collier. So I got about a third or fourth or fifth opinion, and I don't know how many people I conferred with, but the whole Biscayne room seemed to think I needed to talk to Hal Collier. So I started talking to Hal, but we weren't connecting. I was fortunate enough to find a female willing to work with me, and I will let her remain anonymous. She keep behind her profile without my help, and we're on tape, so she led me through the process, and I started getting better, but very slowly. If you're new, I love you, and I wish you a long, slow recovery. Sometimes quickly is probably the most dangerous wording in Alcoholics Anonymous literature. I love you, and I wish you a long, slow recovery. That's where I've seen the best results long term. So I got some help from Hal. I got some help from my female sponsor. She told me who to talk to among the men about what, and we worked out this deal between me and God and the Bible. And I returned to the Bible through Emmett Fox. 20 years later, I returned to the church through the writings of Marcus Bohr. And that's outside literature. I'm not going into detail on that, but that's my long-term track record in my return to the religious realm. The way it was explained to me, spirituality deals with this side of the grave. Religion deals with the other side of the grave. Spirituality is by its nature demonstrative, and that's what we're in here to do, is demonstrate a faith that works. Religion is debatable. We are all united by principle, divided by theology, and in these rooms, by the grace of God, we keep the focus on the principles, the unifying principles, not the divisive theologies, and you name it. And it's, I've had some great teachers. I had some great teachers in the Marine Corps. I have forgotten the dollar amount that I was given that it cost this nation to train a Marine lieutenant. It's a lot of money that I hope is no longer being wasted on this strong. It was for a lot of years. And it would have been without the intervention of God through Alcoholics Anonymous. I can maybe help myself and somebody else today doing this kind of thing and whatever else, you know, works for me and other people in these rooms. I remember my first job, I got a job driving a taxi for a drunk named Jocko who ran the Sandy Springs tax. His anonymity is no longer an issue. He's no longer with us. The Sandy Springs taxi no longer exists. But I held the world record driving to Jocko 6 years. The money was not good, but I learned to take care of one driver and one car. And everybody else on the road, they were just there. And it taught me a lot of tolerance. I'm fortunate enough to have spent some time between cars on the bus. That's a good way to learn some humility, is to have not have a vehicle and be on the bus. Some of you have experienced that, and there's a very positive side of that that I, you know, look back on. Today I have a driver's license in my real name. I live at the address on that driver's license. That was one of the things Hal Collier told me. He said, when he first, he said, are you living on the address on your driver's license? And I said, no, sir. He said, why not? I said, well, I hadn't bothered to, you know. And he said to me, one of the things the big book says is we do not dodge our creditors. And one of the ways we stop dodging our creditors was we live at the address on our driver's license and we see what shows up in the mailbox. Now, this is old-fashioned. See, this is, you know, old-fashioned AA. And Hal knew a lot about dodges and cons. And I had some very lucrative job offers early in the program. Got a lot of salesmen in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way Hal Carter explained, Hal was a salesman. Hal was a great salesman. Well, he explained it to me. You got a lot of salesmen in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you got a thin line between a salesman and a con artist. And you got some con artists in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you got a thin line between a con artist and a thief. And you got some thieves in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every time I got one of these great large offers, Hal could tell me the name of the con, how it would work out for everybody involved, how much I could probably get out of it before the gentleman blew town. And I didn't do that. I stuck with my job with Jocko. And there were two rules. I drove nights. No numbers. No drugs. The money driving a taxi at night can be very lucrative if you cross some legal boundaries. I loved at night taxiing. It was just the taxi drivers, the police, and the drunks. It was pretty much just about everything about it on the road out there. I stuck with the rules Jocko gave me. Numbers. No drugs. He didn't say anything about professional women. And I'm not going to say anything about it either. And I just burned out on that, and I went with, while I was in the taxi, I remember one night, one day I was on day job for a while there. I was on days, and some of you remember a guy around here named Shaky Sam. Sam came up on the taxi stand. Sam was driving for Jocko off and on too, just like I was back in the day. Anyway, Sam came up on the same taxi stand I was on, and I was having a bad day, and I really needed somebody. I talked to Sam, and he said, I told him, what was wrong. I wasn't getting where I thought I was supposed to be getting on, what schedule I was supposed to be getting on. And Tricky Sam sat there and said, "Did Rusty, I'm at peace with my priorities. I'm sorry you're not. I'm not too worried about anybody else's." And it took me quite a while to realize that Sam had the sanity, serenity, and sobriety that he had because Sam was at peace with his personal priorities, as opposed to chasing all the symbols of success that are so important to so many people in this world, in this society. I collected all the symbols of success. I had my degree and my commission and my home and my wife and my kids, and I had was buying a new truck, and the wife had a nice car to drive. I collected all the symbols of success that I went after, and it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough because I was dealing with the insatiable appetite of untreated alcoholism. And had Sam not showed up when he did and helped me get through that little crisis, there have been many other crises. The first turning point in this program was long before I got here, when Bill Wilson was standing in the lobby at the Mayflower Hotel, and he made a decision to pick up a phone, not a drink. That was the first real turning point. And the first thing I was taught in Alcoholics Anonymous was pick up a phone, not a drink. And I was in the Marine Corps long enough to understand blind obedience. Blind faith, I still do not believe in blind faith. I have no use for blind faith. I am not a blind faith believer. I believe in a demonstrative spirituality, and I see people in these rooms walk something, live something, become something that they weren't when they got here. And one of the great rewards of Alcoholics Anonymous is to see the light come on in somebody else's eyes. Be able to carry a message of experience, strength, and hope that is not debatable. On paper, I have 2 honorable discharges, 1 as a sergeant, 1 as a captain. I've never been a sergeant in the Marine Corps, but I've got an honorable discharge as one. And the way that works is I was an E5 on paper for OCS, Officers Candidate School. When I was commissioned, I was discharged as a sergeant and commissioned as a lieutenant. So I've got an honorable now. And the paperwork I'm not real big on. Some of you have seen my crazy papers. I can document recovery from paranoid schizophrenia. Back into the mainstream of life, driving a retail delivery route for, I drive auto parts today. That's what I do. I deliver auto parts for a retail auto supply place, one of several. And we let them remain anonymous. I'm not sure why, but what the hell. But, you know, it's been a hell of a ride. It's been a hell of a journey. And the destination is to enjoy the journey. The mission is to find God. A God that I can work with, live with. I have not acquired great wealth in these rooms from a monetary standpoint. I don't hate money. I hate what I've seen it do to a lot of people. I've never been a high roller. I have no desire to be a high roller. I don't need what I need. If I need a Ferrari to attract it, I'm better off without it. And just read between the lines. There's a lot of things I don't. And I'm not knocking Ferraris. I was given a canary yellow Ferrari for my 19th anniversary. It's about that long, about that high. Sits on my desk at the housing. I am currently, what it's like today, I live in a high-rise in Buckhead and drive a Buick. The high-rise in Buckhead, to be a little more honest, is senior housing. The Buick's an 02. The bottom line is, I'm at peace with my priorities. I'm comfortable within my own skin. That's what I came here without. I've got a wealth of people that I love and love me. I remember many of days. I called Hal one night. And I don't even remember what I said. It was just my world was coming. He said, well, you're calling me not drinking liquor. He said, rest of your soul. You're an alcoholic. You're not drinking liquor. The rest is details. When we get lost and wrapped up in the details and we forget why we're here, we've loved it. And what bothers me more than anything I hear in these rooms, and a lot I hear in these rooms, is we'd be better off without. My best thinking didn't get me here. My best thinking's after I've checked in with some of you guys and bounced it around a little bit, bounced it off somebody. My best thinking is after I talked to my sponsor. I didn't have a sponsor at all en route here, unless you want to count Jimmy Buffett. And that's a whole other subject. But the point is, my independent self-sufficiency is what the literature says is the problem, not my best thinking. My intellectual self-sufficiency. My having to figure it out all by myself and forgetting it's a wee deal. My disease is not out there in the parking lot doing push-ups. It's right in here with me. It goes with me everywhere. It's with me 24/7. If you can leave it in the parking lot doing push-ups, please leave it at home instead. About officially out of time. I could go on for hours, but I won't. I know y'all are tired of listening to me. But I want to remind all of you that you're a veteran of the war within. And it's an honor to speak to you veterans. And the Al-Anons, when we get past all the diagnostic labels, we're pretty much all survivors of something. No victims, all survivors. All veterans, all survivors. Tim, thank you, sir. I appreciate the honor of doing this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. Frank, let's get some chips out.
Everybody, I'm Frank Waters. I'm a recovered alcoholic. 6 years in the United States Marine Corps. I'll accept that from my grandfather that died in World War II. Here in the program, we have a chip system to mark your time in recovery. It's the days you put together and your honor to a commitment to yourself. That's what these chips are for. So if you have any questions about what's fixing to happen, like I did, because I didn't know what the hell was going on when they got up and gave out the chips the first time. We give out a white chip for people that want to have a desire to stop drinking. This is something to stick in your pocket and remind yourself of that desire. Does anybody here tonight have a desire to stop and want to pick up a white chip? After 30 days and nights, you get a aluminum chip, silver chip. Anybody have 30 days? After 90 days and 3 months and nights, you give out a red chip. Does anybody have 3 months that would like to pick up a chip? After 6 months, you get a yellow chip. After 9 months, you have a green chip. After a year or multiples of years, you get a blue chip. Does anybody have a birthday?
My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
3 years. And I just did it by praying, going to meetings, reading literature, doing service work, thanking God every day, asking Him to keep me sober, and just doing what everybody else does to stay sober. So thank you.
About 3.5 years ago, I was giving this little person here to take care of about her first sponsor. And she's my oldest daughter, and I love
her. I'm Kat, I'm an alcoholic. This is four. I did it by doing what I was told, coming in, getting a sponsor, taking the steps, following people around that call me crazy. I just did what I'm told. I got involved, and I love my life today. So thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Anybody else have a year? I don't like doing this, but it seems to be a practice. In case you were nodding out or whatever you're doing and we're just too self-absorbed to... Anybody else want to pick up a white chip? Okay, I'll leave one up here so you can steal it after the meeting if you so desire. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, next week, Care W of the 7:30 early morning study group. Gosh, her sobriety day is 1983. Little time there. And then Lyle P. Lyle P., you know him from the fourth edition, page 522, The Story Grounded, the Northwest Airline pilot. He's a member of the Stockbridge Group, South. Lyle will be speaking Monday after next, June 9th. Founders Day weekend in Akron is the previous weekend. And so we're calling it the Founders Weekend Wrap-Up with Lyle Prowse. Oh, I wanted to say one thing. I'm not a veteran, but my father was an Air Force pilot and captain. We lost him in service in 1960. His oxygen system failed flying out of an air base near Tokyo, Japan. I want to salute my dad. He's always been my hero. Okay, if there are no further announcements, I remind each of you that anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions that reminds us to place principles before personalities. For those who will, please join hands in the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.